Hello, this is Janet Gowan welcoming you to Love Letters Live, and today's guest is something really extraordinary to share with you. Musaddiq Badar, who was on Love Letters Live many years ago when he was 16 and had come to the United States via Pakistan after having fled with his family from Afghanistan. I'm going to ask you to kind of recap all this. And at the end of the last one, he said he was going to write a love letter to his parents. And I heard from him recently, and he said now, what, 5 years later, I've written that letter, and it's for a beautiful reason. And Musaddiq, would you just please start from the beginning and tell about your life?
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I was born in Kabul, Afghanistan. I was born in 1992, just as the political situation there was starting to unravel. And in 1996, actually, my family and I left Kabul and immigrated to a nearby refugee camp on the border of Kabul or Afghanistan and Pakistan in Peshawar. So we stayed in this refugee camp for about 6-7 months, thinking that we would eventually go back to Kabul because things were going to get better. That's what we were hoping.
Your life there was nice?
It was good at the beginning. My father was actually a radio producer. He was a journalist. My mother worked at the airport. People were happy. And we were hoping that things would go back to that kind of lifestyle soon. But as it turns out, that wasn't the case. And so after 6-7 months
of this... Because the Taliban took over.
The Taliban took over. And they stayed in power, unfortunately, for a few years until obviously in 2011. So in 1996, when we moved to the refugee camp, after about 6 months, things weren't getting better, and we needed to start looking for opportunities to really carry on with life and move on and continue to prosper. And so we decided to move to the city from the refugee camp. We moved down to Islamabad, where my father had some friends and acquaintances who were in the carpet-making business. And they, through them, my brother, myself, and my mother, we started working at a carpet factory, putting in 12, 13-hour shifts a day.
And you were a six-year-old.
Starting as a six-year-old making carpets. To me, this is life. This is normal. I'm happy because I have something to do during the day, because I have people to interact with, because I'm safe, because I have a loving family and loving parents. And so it was, to me, it was life. And so I went along with it. And, you know, we were working during the day and at nighttime. My parents really made sure that they taught us something. Even though we didn't have the opportunity to go to school, get a formal education, they sat us down at night and told us that it's important to learn and to have an education. And really, they told us that that's what they're trying to do for us. That's what they're working for, so that we could have an opportunity to get an education in the future. But at the time, it was homeschool at night, after dinner, after long days of work.
Did you look forward to that, sitting down with your parents and learning?
It was a part of the day that we got to get together and learn from each other and hang out and not only talk about the day, but learn something new, whether it was a new word in English or a new vocabulary.
And they knew enough to teach you arithmetic and history.
They taught us basic math. They taught us history. They taught us little bits and pieces of science, whatever they had learned in high school, because they didn't get a chance to go to college either. So what education they had. And my father, he was a journalist. He knew a lot about the world. He read a lot. He was a smart man. And so it helped having that at nighttime, even though there wasn't that formal education in a classroom with other students. It was better than nothing, and I was grateful that they were giving us that.
And a clear indication, if they were doing that, a clear indication to you, spoken or not, that you had a future coming up.
Absolutely.
Even though you were then in a refugee camp.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, they tried to tell us that just because life right now isn't the way we want it to be, doesn't mean it can't be better. It doesn't mean that you can work towards something better, that you can continue to dream. And really, that was important as a kid, to know that you can dream and you can have goals and you can work to achieve them. And so in Pakistan, even though we were strangers, we were refugees, they made sure to tell us that and made sure that we understood that. And
so you went from one language to another also. You spoke as a child, you spoke...
Mm-hmm. I spoke Farsi or Dari.
In Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan. Uh-huh. And in Pakistan, the native language there is Urdu. And so to interact with people outside there, we had to learn Urdu. And really, I picked it up very quickly. I became fluent in it, even though I couldn't read or write. The alphabet is very similar, so I picked it up easily. And then it took us about... So we lived in Pakistan for 6 years, and it took us 4 years to apply for an immigration visa to the United States. It was a long, tedious process that began with applying for refugee status with the United Nations, who then referred us to the American Embassy, and we went through multiple interviews, background checks, health checks, until we were finally granted that visa. I still remember that day. It was May 2nd, 2003, when we got a phone call saying that our visa had been accepted and our flight tickets had been purchased, and they told us to pack your bags. You're flying to the United States of America on May 8th, 2003. So what a magical time, if you can imagine, for me and for my family to have that opportunity at a new life once again, to have that opportunity to go to school, to live safely, to have the opportunity to work for a better future.
Where did you land? Where did your first stop in the United States was where?
First stop was Phoenix, Arizona, where we were set up through an organization that helped my mother get a job at a factory. She was packing cookies at an assembly line. They gave us an apartment. They stocked our fridge with food for the first few weeks. And it was a nice situation at first because we had something that was our own, but the opportunities were far and few in between in Phoenix. And my mother had some friends from her time in Kabul who were in the Bay Area in Concord, California, and they advised us to move out to California in search of better opportunities, being closer to family and friends. They told us it would make a difference, and it did. But once you leave behind your original location that is set up for you through refugee services, you're on your own. You don't have the assistance of the government anymore. You don't have that apartment. You don't have a job. So it was literally...
Why do you think that is? Rather than say you'll have our assistance for a year, say no matter what, why do you think it's location tied?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it could be a lot of just administrative reports and people having to find a new job for you, a new apartment. It's a lot of work on other people's ends. And once they've done it,
to do it twice, it
just, you know, doesn't make sense. And I, to a certain extent, I see that. But so when we moved out to California, it was up to us to kind of reach out to the government and get those resources and get an apartment. And mm-hmm. we were lucky that we had some family here who were able to co-sign our rent for us because my mom didn't have a job at the time. And if mm-hmm. you don't have a job, you can't get an apartment. So within a few months, my mom was working two jobs. She would wake up at 6 a.m, go all the way to take the BART train to San Francisco, work at a subway station, subway store. And then she would go home, back to Concord, work at a local grocery store. And then at night, she would go to adult school to learn English. So there would be days where I wouldn't see her because she would leave. And then by the time she'd come back, I was asleep.
So how did you get to school when you were that young?
She would walk me. The first thing she would do, I would get to school super early before all the other kids because she had to take me there. I mean, we didn't have a car and my father couldn't walk. My father actually, when he was younger, he had polio. Mm-hmm. So he's got a disability and it's tough for him to walk for a long time. But, you know, that was the price we had to pay for the first few months. That's the kind of work you have to do to kind of get to where we mm-hmm. were now. And, you know, things slowly started getting better and better.
So you went to a public grammar school?
I went to a public school for grades 6, 7, and 8.
Oh, middle school.
Middle
okay.
school, yes. That was the first time I had gone to school.
Was that very odd for you to be suddenly in school?
It was a bit strange, yes, to sit alongside other students to see how it all works out. You know, I had heard stories, I had watched movies and seen TV shows, but to actually kind of be in it.
Oh, so you had kind of a positive vision of it from,
okay. Yeah. And once I got to middle school, it was just a big culture shock at first for me to be in that environment, but I fully embraced it. I learned English very quickly. I made friends. I became interested in sports. I played basketball and I played baseball, and you know, I started watching.
You still love baseball?
I love baseball. I love my San Francisco Giants. Yes. Yeah. Okay. And you know, I became immersed in this culture and slowly started loving it. I was becoming a new person and I was enjoying every bit of it.
And your parents were, you said at one point, we were talking before, and you said and you had a, you celebrated Thanksgiving one year and mm-hmm. you had a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
And I was curious about how you were raised and what religion.
So I was born Muslim, but, you know, I grew up in a household that wasn't very religious. My parents never really forced us to pray or to practice or really what they taught us were cultural values of a religion that tells you to treat others the way you want to be treated. And that's really the lesson my parents taught us.
Is so the Christmas tree was more of a decorative Hello America kind of
absolutely.
Thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. It was about the values that it brings the whole family together. It's a time where you can say thanks to others in your family and your friends and show your appreciation. And so they made sure that we learned those lessons at a young age, and those are the lessons that I'm still carrying with me.
And how did you come to – I know you went to a rather elegant private high school. So yeah. How did that – there was somebody who was, what, tutoring you or mentoring you or
– Mm-hmm. So I had a tutor who would come help me and my brother with schoolwork. And on the weekends, he would take us to basketball games or baseball games. He taught us how to play baseball, bought me my first baseball mitt, actually, that I still have with me.
Was he a lot older? Was
He was 5-6 years older, so when I was in seventh grade, still a young person. He was in high school, and he was doing this out of the goodness of his own heart because mm-hmm. he wanted to make that connection. He wanted us to get comfortable with the culture here and with the surroundings, and it was it's something that I've been very grateful for my whole life.
Are you still in touch with him?
Absolutely, I'm still.
There's a love letter someday. Okay.
Yeah, we keep in touch on Facebook, and hopefully I'll be seeing him this weekend. But his family introduced me to the Athenian school. That's the school he went to at the time, and you know, kind of went out on a limb and applied for a scholarship. And next thing I knew, I was going to a college preparatory school where I had the attention of amazing teachers with smaller classrooms and people who were interested in me succeeding. And really, that was very important for my education at the time. So I was very grateful for that. And then the last 4 or 5 years, I've been in Washington, D.C. I decided to go to George Washington University. I majored in journalism and mass communications. Fell in love with journalism from the get-go. And around my sophomore year in college, I became interested in video production and decided to pursue a career in television news production. I actually work for CBS News now. My first job out of college, I am loving it. It's exactly what I want to do.
Do you get to, as so much of a newcomer to this industry and this job, do you get to choose projects and actually do video stories? I'm gathering that means there's a story and you do a video of it like we see on the news.
Absolutely,
like
So I'm working for CBS Evening News now, and whatever is happening that's going on the show that day, to some extent, I have a hand in it, whether it is making calls to schedule interviews or going out into the field to cover a press conference or going to the Capitol to cover a congressional hearing or, you know, being at the Cuban embassy when the embassy opened or, you know, being, you know, when the Pope visited D.C., I spent 14, 15 hours at the Vatican embassy covering him as he came and went and greeted the students that were standing there waiting for him. So I've had some incredible experiences I'm loving every bit of it.
And you said that you were going to read a letter.
Absolutely. So I got in touch with you a few weeks ago because, you know, now that I've graduated college and I have my own job and I can kind of stand on my own feet, I've had a time to reflect and think about all the things my parents have done, not just for me, but for my siblings. And I felt that it was the appropriate time to just kind of sit back and tell them how much I appreciate what they've done. And no better way.
Because even though they know it, I'm sure from your behavior and how you live your life and what you've said to them, Yeah. Having it in writing is a whole different...
It does make a lot of difference.
Because they get to read it every time they want to be reminded when mm-hmm. you're not there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I say thank you to them every single day, but, you know, to sit down and put it into words, I think it really quantifies
and
it.
And it's one of the first steps of documenting your own history in your own hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's hear you.
All right, here we go. Dear Mom and Dad, can you believe it has been over 13 years since we came to America? A lot has happened over the years. We have built a new life in this land, and while you have been hesitant at times to embrace the American culture, my siblings and I are fully immersed in it, armed with the values you have bestowed upon us. Values like hard work, honesty, dedication, love, compassion, patience, and understanding, to include a few. The first few years, it wasn't always easy. There were early mornings walking to school in rainy winter months because we didn't own a car. There were long lines at social services because we didn't have the necessary resources. There were late nights in emergency rooms because we were careless kids breaking bones and spraining ankles playing sports. There were long months with no weekends and years without vacations because you needed work to overtime to ensure we had everything we wanted. You preached material goods aren't the means for happiness, but nevertheless, you made sure we had the latest toys and gadgets so we would feel up to par with our peers. I'm not sure how you managed to pull it all off without losing your sanity or turning to vices to cope. The only answer is love. You did it because you love each other, because you love your children, and because you fell in love with the idea of giving us a better life. That is the essence of the American dream, and you have proved that anyone can rise from rags to riches and respectability with hard work and good intentions. And in doing so, you have changed the trajectory of our family for generations to come. I hope you truly understand the gravity of your work and the positive consequences it will have not only on my life, but on my kids' lives, and so on. So I am grateful for the life you have lived, for the sacrifices you have made, the prices you have paid, just to ensure we can have an opportunity to reach high and take anything we set our minds on. With the right attitude, no matter the altitude, in your footsteps we shall follow with gratitude and allow you to enjoy the fruits of your labor. That time is now, not later. You can sit back, we will cater, whether it is food on the table or a bill for the cable. Even changing your neighbors, a new house to bring in new flavors. Don't think of it as a favor, it's my responsibility as a torchbearer to ensure your comfort the way you once did for me, to apply the lessons you have bestowed upon me. Do believe I take it seriously, even when I don't seem to be. I've just begun, and there's a lot more work to be done. But thanks to you, I am confident that I can.
Thank you. Oh, that is just the most perfect letter. It's such a perfect piece of writing. And it's occurring to me now that I'm hearing that you have written this perfect thing in your fourth language.
Yeah. Farsi, Urdu, now English, third language, yeah.
Third language, yes, and, that is astounding.
You know, it's really difficult to say thank you sometimes because it's two simple words, but it carries a lot of weight and a lot of meaning. And to be able to capture it, I think you really have to sit back and let your heart speak. And, you know, when I was doing this, I went through so many drafts, not really sure.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
So many different drafts, typing, deleting, because didn't really know where to start and where to begin. But
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because there's something about, you know, people think of a love letter as just passion spilled. And in a way it is, and it should be. And yours is filled with detail. And you never mention in this, you never mention a negative thing about your life before. You're not evoking that memory. You're talking only about their strength and positive. But also, passion plus planning makes a knockout
letter. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I didn't realize that. Okay.
You mentioned focusing on the positivity. I think, you know, it's a time for celebration. It's the negativity is in the past, and you can't really focus on that because, you know, it's only going to draw you down and down. You have to focus on the things you've achieved and the positivity that you can create because...
And the whole point about what your parents have done for you is they left the negative behind.
Absolutely.
They filled your life with positive.
And that's the biggest thing they could have done is, really work hard to provide a positive future for me and my siblings. And now we're at a point where they've done that. They've achieved that goal because I've graduated college. I have my own job. My brother's graduated college. He's got his own job. And
what your parents did the perfect job in child rearing.
Yeah. And really, it's it's incredibly difficult to raise kids when you're moving around from one country to another, when you're in constant state of having to adjust to new cultures. It's really easy because I've seen it with other friends. I've seen it with other families where things go wrong. And
what goes wrong? I mean, your family carries no bitterness.
No. We've made it through these tough times with love, with being with each
and
other.
Knowing and there was a good future, because that sitting down at the end of every day to give you lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. My dad often talks about, he says, I wonder what I would do if I won the lottery, if I won the jackpot. And, I sit back and I smile. I tell him, Dad, you've already won.
Yes.
Like, this is it. This is what winning the lottery looks like. And it's important that he understands that he knows that it's here and it's happening and we're in the middle of it. And, for me, what makes me happy is now that responsibility is in my hands to carry that forward and lead not just for my siblings, but in the future for my children and grandchildren and so on, because mm-hmm. it's, our family, we're the first generation here, and it's going to continue on for God knows how long. So it's important to have those fundamentals down right.
And you're going to write this in Farsi for their copy.
I'm going to write it in Farsi, handwriting, so it lasts.
Indelible ink.
Mm-hmm. Good paper, good ink, because, I want them to be able to read this years from now. And I want my kids and my brother's kids and my sister's
to know something about their grandparents and what heroes they were for having left instead of staying and being tormented and victimized and let that trickle down to their children. They let only good trickle down to you, even through hardship.
A lot of times I share my story with friends or with family or with new people, and they praise me for the work that I've done, but really I couldn't have done any of this if it wasn't for my parents. So I get a lot of credit that I don't always deserve, because my parents were the ones who made this all happen. And
you're also, I'm guessing, I believe in this, genetically lucky for a lot of strength. But, you don't get credit. You do get credit for what you do with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that regard, you really do.
Yeah.
You don't turn your back on anything.
No. I've been very grateful for everything that's come my way, and I have made sure to take full advantage of it. But I've also made sure to give back, because, that's the most important thing. It makes you feel good when you can get something, but it makes you feel so much better when you can give back and see the smile on somebody else's face the way somebody once made you smile.
Oh, and good for you.
Really, that's what life is about.
One of the most beautiful men I've ever met. I'm just so glad we know each other.
Me too.
Me too. I have a question about you now. You're so thoroughly an American.
Mm-hmm.
That can you look back and see the four-year-old you and relate to that
child
who was not this American grown-up? I mean, is it easy to
combine
the two?
I've changed in a lot of ways, but I also am the same person that I was as a six-year-old sitting in the carpet factory, because, I had those same values in me. I worked hard. I loved my family. And at the end of the day, that's what I thought about. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm working hard. I'm doing what I love. I'm following my dreams. And all I'm doing it for is for my family, because, there's nothing else you have in this life other than your blood and your tight-knit family.
That's so true.
It's important to focus on that, even through the tough times, because there are going to be tough times. It's not always good and easy. And I did have a lot of sleepless nights in college where, things were going so well, or I wasn't getting good grades, or, I was kind of thinking too much about getting a job. But, I pushed myself through that by just thinking about my family, thinking about the past and where we were and where we could be in the next 10, 15 years. And that's been the biggest motivator for me.
Well, I want to thank you for doing this with me. I just love listening to you. And as things come up in your life, so you're a journalist, and I asked you this before, but I'm going to ask you, in public.
Mm-hmm.
Will you come back and talk about, we were talking about uplifting stories that you do not see in the newspapers.
Yes.
Countries that are at war and leaders that are teaching hatred and people are not all going for it. People are bonding together very often in these warring countries in good friendships and real love that will last. And we don't hear about it. You talked about a woman earlier who had taken
an abandoned laundromat and turned it into a daycare center for kids who didn't have anywhere to go, with nothing but her own love and her own compassion for her community. And I think there's so many stories like that.
Will you come back and tell us a few?
Absolutely. Okay. I've been meaning to write about stuff like this or make videos about it. And
well, you're young yet. I mean, you'll get to do it all.
There's plenty of time.
Will you do it with me, some of them?
Absolutely.
Because I just love hearing these stories.
And talk about it.
Thank you, honey. Well, I want to say that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, just take a look at your life and at the people who have been by your side. And even if your life has had no strains such as fleeing one country to another and starting over, there have been people in your life who have stood by you and would probably love to hear from you.
Yes,
thank you. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and we'll have Musa Dick Badar come back later. Thank you again, dear.